Tell Rope Heroes. You know, those are real people, and I know you know them. It may be the neighbor who shovels your mom's sidewalk in the wintertime. I've got one of those. I certainly appreciate that. Maybe that guy named Greg who pulled over and helped you get your car started so you actually didn't need a tow. We are celebrating again. Every community has them. Some people in our communities don't know how to say no, but then again, they're equipped for that, and they're ready to go. And others just step up when needed. And today, again, we celebrate Tow Rope Heroes here on the Tow Rope Here tour on Voices of Montana. I'm Tom Schultz. We are live at the Circle T Tap Room in Big Timber, Montana, and with a whole host of good folks from Big Timber to talk about here today. I'll kind of give you a hint as to a bit later on. Of course, this is Cattle Country, and we'll be talking a little bit about the Meats of Montana program with Brian Engel. Also, right up here will be Heidi Todd, but a bit later on, we're going to talk about how we protect our waters in communities like this. The Boulder River Watershed Conservation District's Dan Rosted will be alongside. Chris Mias will be with us as well. And a lot of folks, the Inderland Angus Ranch will to be honored here as well. But let's get going from the Circle T Tap Room. It's Coulter and Kendra Todd's place. And Cousin, who I understand doesn't always get free beer here, is Heidi Todd, Crazy Peak Cattlewoman. Good morning, Heidi. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So now's the time to rub your relative about live on the radio about the next one's on you, right, Coulter?
Yeah. Crazy heifer.
We're going to talk about some of those beers later on because I can't help it. But let's start off with the Crazy Peak Cattlewomen, what we kind of come to know as a farm-to-table kind of program in the schools. Vital, how did it happen here in Big Timber?
Sure. So I'm going to start a little bit of background on how Crazy Peak Cattlewomen got started. We are our own nonprofit organization, a 501c3. So our mission is to serve as agriculture advocates. You know, in doing that, we do it through education in our local community. We promote the beef industry, and we develop those leadership roles in women specifically. So our beef to school journey started about 5 years ago in 2017, and has just morphed into the incredible program that it is, that we are bringing local beef to the schools in Big Timber, to the grade school and to the high school. So anytime in their hot lunch and they're eating beef, it's all locally donated beef that is in that lunch program.
That is so cool, by the way.
It is an awesome program.
Yeah.
So, and it would not, like, we are incredibly grateful for all of our donors. We come from a very, very giving community.
Yeah.
So the producers that always step up and donate those beef animals, it's just an incredible, incredible.
And the kids, when they're eating, they go, that's my dad's burger, right? Yeah.
It is kind of a joke at the hot lunch. My kids were like, yeah, did you know that this is what we're eating today?
Yeah. Well, they oughta, because that's how you stay connected, I think, in communities, when you recognize that. But talk more about the program, because I'm sure there were challenges to overcome, but you had a given community. But nonetheless, there was a process that had to be put in place,
sure,
I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, like every year we learn something new with the program. Just kind of how to streamline it. Our biggest thing that we've had to streamline is the communication. You have several working parts between the producer that's donating, to scheduling the harvest date at Pioneer Meats, to meeting with the food service team at the high school to see what is needed and see what cuts they want. I mean, so I think communication is one of the biggest things that we have strived to just streamline in the whole process. And the whole reason that we started this program is we wanted to bridge that gap in bridging the gap with the kids as far as where their food comes from. We try to get into the schools as much as we can as far as educating and engaging them and just not removing that part of it, to just know that it doesn't come from the grocery store.
How does that take place?
So we do it in several different things. In the grade school, there is one of our great things that we do is the fourth grade bratwurst contest, where the fourth graders... Yes!
Yeah.
So the fourth graders, they get to actually create a recipe for the brat. They get to put what in they want. Then they vote on kind of the top four brats. Then Pioneer Meats is graciously, they actually make the brats. Then the kids, we go in there, go through that process, and then we do a field trip at the processing plant. So we go down there, they get to watch how it's made, and just the whole process, and then they get to sample their product.
That has to leave an impression. I mean, just listening to it, it would leave an impression on me.
It's a very hands-on thing. So we're trying to bridge that gap of where their food does come from.
So then these kids come up with these great brats, and who steals those ideas?
I don't know.
A guy like Brian, maybe?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
They come up with some good ones.
Yeah, I bet. Brian Engel is with us as well, as we are on the Tow Rope Tour here in Big Timber, Montana, at the Circle T Tap Room. The Tow Rope Tour in Big Timber today, brought to you by Sibanye Stillwater. They brought the program here. And, of course, tour sponsor Mountain Health, our tour sponsor Mountain Health Co-op and Western Ranch Supply, also a part of the sponsorship here today. So big thanks. All right, let's welcome Brian Engel in. Brian is with Meats of Montana. Would you say he's one of your Tow Rope heroes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He does a lot for the community. This program, as far as the beef to school, would not be done without him and his team at Pioneer Meats. It's just it's a combination effort between the cattlewomen, the Pioneer Meats, and then the food service staff at the school.
Brian, and good morning, sir. How are you?
Very good.
Oh, my fault. Thank you for being here. Appreciate the service to the community. What got you involved? Were you just anxious to launch into it?
I grew up here. We've always been involved. Volunteerism is the heart of our country, I feel, and we have to take care of our kids and help them grow and their minds and their experiences. And the cattle women have been very instrumental in helping me promote the idea of the name or the develop the unique sausage varieties. And it's really fun to be involved with the kids at that age, just because they're extremely impressionable. And
I bet they are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's actually the sausage maker then.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So I got to talk about some of these recipes. I got to kind of park over that a little bit, that some of these fourth graders come up with, Brian. Your thoughts on that? This is really good. Or how do you let a fourth grader down about maybe there was just too much? I wouldn't use a pound of pepper next time.
Yeah. But you know, when they come up with an idea and say, can we put gummy bears in a sausage? We did it.
Did you?
It turned out good if you prepare them right, but other than that, no, it was not a not a continuing effort.
How that just sounds endearing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how long has this program been going on?
Probably 5 or 6 years.
Yes.
Years we've done it.
Do you get some of those fourth graders come back and go, you know, Brian, I kind of whiffed on it last year, but can I try it this way this year?
No, because we hope they're not in fourth grade twice.
Right, yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah. Knocking on your door.
Yeah. But no, we have one that's, you know, the cattle women's brat was extremely successful. Our mac and cheese brat's been very successful. So there's been some very good ideas come through in that.
It sounds like it. Yeah. Talk about the partnership, Heidi. You were starting on that, but as we noted here, Brian maybe didn't know quite accurately. A rich history in ranching in this community, and that's very important.
Yeah, it's incredible important. You know, just the involvement and the efforts that it takes on everybody's level as far as the involvement in the program. It's incredible.
Talk more about the program, Brian.
Must have been about 10, 11 years ago, Betsy Enderlin came to me and said, can we get our local beef in the school? And she tried a little bit, you know, I'll give the cattle women's credit for being able, with their with their larger group and a cohesive effort, we were able to get it pushed. But it's people like her that gave the idea a long time ago, and we start poking at the school board and the lunch program, and they got tired of hearing from us, and so they finally accepted it. And it's been, I think it's been extremely successful. I take a lot of pride in knowing that what we're doing is feeding our kids every day in our community. It's helping utilize some of those call animals from our area for that program, and the ranchers get credit for donation and helping out as well.
Well, that's part of the beauty of the program.
Yeah, and I think one of the key components is our Cattlewomen group is just pretty much incredible. We got a lot of go-getters. There's a lot of heart and passion, and just it takes a lot of volunteers, takes a lot of volunteer hours, because that's it's a pretty much a 100% volunteer program. So to pull something like that off, it takes a great group like we have going, and several people donating a lot of time towards a passion.
Yeah. Well, name a few. They're Toro Heroes, right?
They are.
Yeah.
Yep. Between Brian Engle and Cindy Bainter at the high school, but just our group of Cattlewomen organizations in a whole. But it just, yeah, 5 years has 5 years has gone by fast, and we just, you know, we work on improving it every year. And I think we're going towards a pretty good goal.
Yeah. What's the process next? By the way, this is Heidi Todd, Crazy Peak Cattlewomen. Brian Engle is with us as well. Pioneer Meats of Montana, the Toro Rope Tour live in Big Timber at the Circle T Tap Room. The process going forward. And I want to get an idea of some numbers here as well. How many animals you process a year? How many kids you are feeding in the school?
So approximately we go through about 9 animals a year. There's about 300 to 400 pounds of ground beef that the school goes through per month. Mm. So we kind of gauge off of that. So it's about 9, roughly around the average of 9 animals are donated a year.
Is that through the K through 12 program then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. That's,
yep.
That's a lot of critters.
Yep, the grade school and high school lunch program.
And we've had people donate process or finish fat cattle as well.
Oh, okay.
for the school to utilize, and that's been very successful too.
Do you process the meat over there?
We do.
Yeah.
Over at the Pioneer Meats facility.
Yeah, from start to finish.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, we're USDA inspected. And
great.
We have our new facility in the middle of town called Meats of Montana, and there we are offering a little bit more, a wider variety of locally produced beef, lamb, and pork, and grass-fed, grain-finished, you name it. And then that's new to us this summer. And
gotcha.
It's been a long row hoeing, but
yeah,
it's finally coming through. And then when we finish that facility up after game season, we will have that USDA certified so we can package snack sticks there. The individual sticks again, and we'll be able to process carcasses that we haul in there too.
The quality of the meat, and then the marketing aspect of it as well. You know, your side of things there. Getting kind of into this Meats of Montana downtown. I only got less than a minute here,
sorry.
But that's quite an endeavor too, isn't it?
Oh yes, it's been very, very good, and supporting the local producers and bringing awareness to local producers and what they have to offer.
Yeah. What's next for the program?
So pretty much, you know, we're just kind of keep going on, and we'll grow where needed. But, you know, our biggest thing is other things that we do is we're working on the Cowboy Ball. It's going to be a New Year's Eve dance here in Big Timber, and it's going to be a fun time. So we do student academic scholarships. We do an agriculture career fair at the high school just to highlight different agriculture careers that you can do. We do a fourth and fifth grade farm fair. Those are just a few of the educational tools that we do. But the biggest thing coming up is our Cowboy Ball that's kicking off the New Year's Eve to just ring in the new year good.
I think it's okay to have a little fun along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian, thank you for what you guys do.
Steel outdoor power tools may be hard to wrap, but once they get opened, you'll see why Steel is so easy to give. Find the right gift this year with battery power made by Steel. From mowers and blowers to trimmers and chainsaws, our AK Homeowner series of battery tools starts at just $199.99. Shop now by visiting your local Steel dealer or going to steelusa.com/giftguide. Real Steel. Find yours. All prices MSRP available participating dealers while supplies last.
All right, from the Northern News Network, it's From Montana for Montana, Toe Rope Tour. We are 406 in Big Timber, just down the road from Billings, and, of course, in sort of south central, southwestern Montana. You got a beautiful, beautiful look here of the crazy mountains, and it's crazy as we look at all the number of people who are supporting this community as Toro Apparel. Tom Schultz alongside the show, brought to you in part by Mountain Health Co-op, also Western Ranch Supply and Sibanye Stillwater. And we're talking now with Dan Rosted with the Conservation Districts here, nominated for all the work, Dan, that you do for the waterways. I got a note here. I understand Governor Roscoe created the Upper Yellowstone River Task Force in 1997. Mm-hmm. That was probably something where you just dove in and said, now's the time to do what we need to do to protect the river here.
Well, that the genesis of that was a federal court decision as a settlement from organizations that sued the Army Corps of Engineers because of the flooding in the Paradise Valley in 96-97 to remedy and determine the cumulative effect of human impact in the Yellowstone River Corridor. That was started at Upper Yellowstone River Task Force by Governor Roscoe, morphed into a co-equal partnership between the Conservation District Council, which is the 11 members that border the Yellowstone River, Conservation District bordering the Yellowstone River, and then the Army Corps of Engineers. So it was supposed to be $5 million study turned into a 14-year, $8.5 million study, the most comprehensive study of any river in North America. And all that information is on the website, YellowstoneRiverCouncil.org. So out of that came a set of recommended practices, including floodplain restoration, channel bank stabilization, riparian and wetland management, invasive woody plant control, noxious weeds, water quality and quantity, and the most important for us right now is irrigation water management and efficiency. So we've got a work group working on that. We have staff that are working on that. Currently, we're assisting the Yellowstone River Council, is assisting with 15 projects on the ground in the river corridor. Could be sponsored by conservation districts, could be sponsored by us, could be sponsored by county government.
What are the nature of those projects?
To improve irrigation efficiency and conveyance. And when you look at what's the financial impact of irrigation in Montana, we're working with three different districts right now, one in Custer, one in Rosebud, and another one that covers both Treasure and Rosebud counties. And one in particular, Yellowstone Irrigation District, irrigates 14,000 acres. They pay almost $150,000 in yearly property taxes. Their yearly estimated crop values are $16 million. That's a big impact. That's just one of many irrigation districts, irrigation systems in the Boulder, in their Yellowstone River corridor.
Was it a hurdle to get the various conservation districts to communicate and to work together on various projects? Because there's a certain amount of this is my neighborhood, I need to protect it sort of thing. And I know that you guys, the conservation districts have been around for a while, and they've served a great purpose, and they've grown in a lot of ways too.
Yeah.
But was that a hurdle or?
No.
No, good.
No, absolutely not. The hurdle was working with the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
Sorry
about my guttural laugh on that.
I
get that. Yeah.
No, but they, in the end, did what they were supposed to do. These things were done in cost share. They covered 75% of the cost. State of Montana had to cover the other 25% of the cost. State of Montana, through direct legislative appropriations, spent $2.8 million. That was more than, there was $1 million more than our 25% cost share requirement.
What are you accomplishing?
Right now, one of the things that we're able to do is work with local producers and landowners in the Yellowstone River Corridor for not only irrigation, but invasive woody control, noxious weed control. And more importantly, one of the things that came out of the study was LIDAR mapping that produced the channel migration zone of the Yellowstone River.
Oh, wow.
So, for instance, Yellowstone County uses the channel migration zone mapping to do determinations of how they would zone and how they would, and what they're going to allow to be anywhere near the Yellowstone River Corridor. You can map back and look at those and see the last couple hundred years of where the Yellowstone River's been in the past.
That has to be real cool.
And predict where it may go in the future.
Because I've been part of the Lower Yellowstone growing up in Glendive, Montana, for a lot of years. And so I know those channels change on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of problem does that create then? What will this map, how will it assist in your guys' plans?
Okay, so each individual conservation district manages two important projects. One is the 310 law. So they have to permit anything, any kind of activity anywhere near a perennial stream, particularly the Yellowstone. So that allows them to have the information that they would need. For instance, if somebody wants to put in an irrigation pivot and their 12th tower is going to come within just a few yards of the current existing bank of the Yellowstone, they can look at that and say, well, wait a minute, the channel migration zone mapping will tell you that you might lose that tower someday. Gotcha. And you might have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to protect that.
Yeah, it sounds like you love what you do. That's why you're a total role payroll for this community, Dan.
Yeah,
thank you. Is there somebody you want to quickly give a shout out to as a total role payroll for help that who helps you mm-hmm. help this community?
Well, in this community, I certainly would shout out to the Conservation District Board of Directors, Sweetgrass County Conservation District. We do projects in the county. We also take care of and manage the work of the Boulder River Watershed Association. And we're proud of the fact that this year the Boulder River Watershed Association celebrated its 20th anniversary. Yeah. Stillwater Mine was there at the beginning. In fact, it was their idea. Their folks came to the Conservation District and said, we've seen this work in other states. We'd like to see it happen here. They were proactive in getting this thing going ahead of time. Over the last 20 years, they've contributed more than $500,000 in direct funding for administrative and project funding. And the Boulder River Watershed Association, with grant sponsorship from the Conservation District, have turned that into $2.3 million in on-the-ground projects.
Nice. Give a quick shout-out for that website once again for more information.
For Yellowstone River Council, it's at Yellowstone River Conservation District Council. It's yellowstonerivercouncil.org. Tons of information on there that people would really enjoy.
Yes, absolutely. Dan Rostedt, thank you so much, man.
You bet.
Good job. Appreciate that. We'll take a break and come on back as Chris Mayhus with the Western Sustainability Exchange joins us next here on the Total Rope Tour.
Open enrollment for healthcare.gov is here. If you're uninsured or have a job that doesn't offer insurance, check out healthcare.gov. Due to a new law, prices are lower and more people qualify. Now, 4 out of 5 customers pay just $10 a month or less with financial help. It's easier than ever to find the right plan for you. And millions of Americans, just like you, have already enrolled. New law, lower prices, more people qualify. Sign up at healthcare.gov by December 15th.
It's from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana, 406, and once again on the Tow Rope Tour as we are in Big Timber, Montana. Circle T Tap Room, is it normally open and crowded at 9:30 a.m. in the morning like this? Yeah, okay. We won't go into that. But we will talk more about the Western Sustainability Exchange. I'm Tom Schultz. Chris Mayhus is with us here, nominated as a Tow Rope Hero for what you do there. What do you do there, Chris?
Well, Tom, thank you for the opportunity. The Western Sustainability Exchange has been around for 28 years, and we really have helped a lot with the local food movement. We operate the farmers market in Livingston, but mostly what I do, I'm the program manager, and I work with ranchers on becoming more sustainable and taking better care of their property and being able to pass the ranch on to the next generation in better shape than they found it.
That has been relatively, well, I wouldn't say it's relatively new, but there's it seems like it's been a developing, the sustainability side of agriculture has been developing over a number of years, and it looks like there's a J-curve, because the more you do it, the more understanding you get about it, and the new practices open up for producers.
Yeah, I think that's very true. We're learning a lot about what we can do, especially in terms of protecting the soil and having healthier soil to produce crops and livestock. The livestock industry, I think, has been very good at being productive. And so we're very good at raising. We lead the world in seed stock here in Montana, and we have so we have great genetics. Ranchers have always been good at conservation and taking care of the land. But I think we're learning a lot here, especially recently, like you say, about soil health and things that we can do. And taking care of the soil leads to greater biodiversity and a cleaner environment for everyone. So it's very beneficial.
What would be one of those things that you learned that you went like, oh, gosh, how come we haven't been doing that all along? A real simple type of process or function that just made a lot of sense and it was like one of those bings on the head. Why didn't I think of this sooner?
Right on. Well, you'll have some guests coming up here, the Enderlin Ranch and the Halverson Ranch and the Cayuse Livestock. And I'll speak to the success that they've had with improved grazing practices. And so what that amounts to is concentrating animals on smaller units of land for shorter periods of time, which provides for a lot longer rest and recovery periods for the plants, which covers the soil, protects it, and leads to the soil being able to absorb more water and have more water available for the plants. So pretty simple concept.
Yeah.
But it's something that's really catching on, and folks are having a lot of success with that.
Have a minute, and we'll hold you over, and then the Inverlands will join us here in just a little bit as well to talk more about what's happening on the ground. What's the opposite of that? What's one or more of those complex processes that take a little more to get into?
So something related to that is a carbon trading project that we've been working on. We've got 5 ranches and about 75,000 acres right now that are trading the carbon that they're storing in the soil to companies in exchange for money that they can use to improve their infrastructure. So water, fence, labor as well, that helps them do a better job of grazing.
And that's a broad picture too. And then there's going to be many players involved in something like that, which complicates it, I suppose.
Right, yeah. Right. So what we're working on so far is a pilot effort, and we're hoping that that project gets registered on an international exchange soon, and there'll be a lot of companies coming in and want to purchase those credits. So we hope to be able to reward farmers and ranchers with that, with those dollars.
Well, stand by. We'll talk more. Program manager of the Western Sustainability Exchange, and also joining us soon, Roger and Betsy Inverland. We are live from the Circle T Tap Room in Big Timber on the Tow Rope Tour.
Right after this.
Great to have you joining us here once again. I hope your day is going well. It's Monday. I know we can't trust that day, but get out there and kick it this week. And I hope all the family that's coming for Thanksgiving is traveling well. We have a show focused really on some natural resources, and it occurs about the importance of a strong community and community partners, like we talked about the conservation districts and the government and Sibanye-Stillwater, their good neighbor agreement and commitment to sustainable practices. They're part of the sponsors here today for this Tow Rope Tour, 406 in Big Timber, Montana, also Mountain Health Co-op and Western Ranch Supply. And we're going to continue with Chris Mayhus, who's the program manager with the Western Sustainability Exchange, but also add to the mix Roger and Betsy Inverland, longtime ranchers, the Inverland Angus Ranch, who have adopted some of these practices that Chris and I were talking about. First, hello to Roger. How you doing, sir?
Good. Great, Tom.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, how's the business?
Good.
Well, a lot of challenges. There's been some challenges.
There are challenges, but yeah. Overall good.
Betsy, yep. Is he telling the truth? Or
He is telling the truth, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And I'm glad to hear that, too. I want to start by talking about why, as a family, you guys continue to ranch and to have a connection to the land and the community, Roger.
For us, my parents ranched. I had it in my mind early on that I wanted to, and I had a grandfather who was in the Angus business. So just progressed from that. It's been something I've known I wanted to do since I was 12 to 15 years old. So it's just been a pursuit of passion, I think.
Just love working with the animals, love working outdoors, being your own boss kind of thing.
Yeah, that's it. And then later on, learned the value of what we could do and taking care of the land, what that could mean.
Nice. I have to apologize to Betsy because I called you your own boss.
That's right.
Truth be known.
That is true.
What does it bring for you?
You know, our ranch's mission, being in the seed stock business, is to provide cattle and genetics and services that help other ranchers stay in business and be profitable. And so to me, that drives what we do to produce low input cattle so that can reduce cost to people that use our genetics.
Yeah.
And help them stay in business and be profitable.
Yeah, and that's, I think, part of the values that we share in Montana. Is given back. You guys are recognized as Tow Rope Heroes, not just for what you do at the Inverland Angus Ranch, but let's talk about that, because Chris Mayhus, again, with us here. Chris, as we were talking about, these guys have adopted some of these practices. Talk about that. Talk about their ranch specifically.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Tom. I've known Roger and Betsy for a long time. They sold beef at our farmers market years and years ago, and they've made a long time commitment to the board, and actually Roger is our standing chairman at this time, so it's a great relationship that we've had with them. And what we were talking about before is kind of a change in grazing management that's happening out there, and so I kind of briefly described how that works, and so Roger, Betsy, maybe you could talk about how that's made a difference on your ranch, especially in a year like this where we had a really tough drought. You know, talk about growth and insects and things. That did this type of grazing make any difference for you guys on the ranch?
That's a good question. Yeah. Go ahead, Roger.
It's made a huge difference. It's really, really hard in a few minutes to do much justice to it, honestly. But, the mindset, it's a mindset. And you have to kind of make that switch. And the mindset is you're going to stockpile feed. You're going to try to leave some cover. And you're going to try to take, your objective is to take care of the land and do those things that can help the water cycle, help the nutrition cycle, and all those things. And, try to minimize the impacts of that during a drought year like this. It is very much a holistic approach, and it's everything you do affects one thing or the other, either positive or negatively. The concentrated animal, we're concentrating our animals, we are increasing our utilization, we're increasing our animal impact, and then we're off. And once we're off, that ground has more opportunity to respond to some of the natural systems, whether it's a small shower, even if it's grasshoppers, the ground has an opportunity to respond to that, or in the long haul. And we're also not thinking year to year. We're thinking, we're trying to stretch that horizon out and how far we're thinking, because our natural systems, they're not actually just an annual event. A lot of times that takes it's a much slower process, and we're just here to try to enhance that a little bit.
I'm going to have you follow up on that, Betsy, because you're nodding your head, as in this is sort of the processes that you guys practice on a regular basis, but there had to be a transition from how you did things then to how you're doing things now.
There was, and I think, like Roger said, the mindset was the biggest challenge to change about, how this is always the way we've always done it and doing something different. But I think focusing on the soil health, which in turn, helps the plant health, which in turn helps the animal health, just focusing on regenerating the soil so that we can grow more grass and thus run more animals. And then, of course, that relates to profitability as well.
Yeah.
But it's been really rewarding to see, more able to grow more grass. And I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, Raj, but probably another 50% more over the years that we've done that. So that's been really rewarding, and especially on a challenging years like this. So, and just, running as many cattle as you have winter feed to run. And that way, if you do have an abundance in the summer, you can, do something more creative with it, like yearlings or lease some ground out or something like that. But just working with natural systems instead of against Mother Nature is kind of what we try to do.
That's probably, Chris, a good way to put it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe a little, if you guys could talk a little bit about the relationship with Native Energy, the company that set up this project, and then what the funding has allowed you to do.
So, Native Energy, through WSE, we got introduced to a company, Native Energy, we are part of a pilot project that's some ranches that have adopted some of these technologies and systems. So that process, we got some funding to install some water, some solar water, and along with that, some additional fencing. And it's a plan where we'll continue to be able to get some funding to accelerate those processes that otherwise that we had on our agenda but just couldn't quite get over the hump to get to.
It's important for all those collaborations to come together. Let me reintroduce Roger and Betsy Inderlin. They're with the Inderlin Angus Ranch. Roger serves on the board for Western Sustainability Exchange. Program manager Chris Mayhus is with us here. Chris, I want to have you launch into, as we kind of hit that last time we talked, about carbon credits. And that's one of those areas I think we don't fully understand. We don't have a clear vision of what's ahead. Set that up for us, and then talk about how the Inderlins are involved.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I was part of the National Carbon Offset Coalition about 15 years ago. We did trade some credits in Montana on the Chicago Climate Exchange. So it's not a new idea. It's been around for a while. Back then, it was a lot more of a speculative thing. There weren't a lot of companies that were really committed to sustainability like there are today. I think the consumer is really driving that. And so You get out there in the investment world, in the financial world, a lot of companies now have entire sustainability departments that really work internally on their own issues to try to clean up their act. But what they can't offset internally, they have to go outside the company and purchase credits. And so there's forestry credits, there's methane credits, there's wind credits, there's solar credits. This is a new concept in agriculture for credits for no-till and minimal-till for farming, and then for better grazing on ranching operations.
Roger, how will that affect your operations?
Well, you know, long-term, I anticipate that this is going to be something that's part of how we do business. And so going forward, that exchange, and as long as we can keep that exchange or a part of that money is being down to the rancher for doing those improved practices, rancher or farmer, you know, that becomes part of your cash flow. Yeah. And I think that's a long-term... I think that will end up being a long-term thing that comes from the consuming public, because they want these practices to be part of what they know is part of what's raising their food.
Yeah, and Betsy, that's part of the branding of your market, of your company, of your beef, right?
Right, right. We've done a lot of farmers markets in the past, and when you stand across the table from the consumer, they want to have confidence in not only that the beef is going to be good, but also how it was raised and how you're treating the land that it's raised on. And those people are pretty informed, and you know, they vote with their dollars. So I think the beef industry has to really think about that in the future.
Chris, just a chance to pat these guys on the back, because it sounds to me like they deserve it.
They've been doing a great job for a long time. Actually, it's funny, when I moved to Big Timber in 1996, I actually went to work for them on their ranch, and they introduced me to my wife. So it's been a pretty good journey. And I didn't want to end without giving them an opportunity to talk about their bull sale a little bit, because it does efficient grazing does demand a different kind of animal, and they happen to be raising and selecting for that kind of genetics. So
interesting.
I laid it out for you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate that.
Well,
yeah.
What is it?
We're having our annual bull sale the 6th of December. We've got 80-plus forage-based regenerative grazing genetics that we're going to offer on that day. So
18-month-old bulls.
18-month-old yep. bulls. Look us up on the web and see what we're about.
Nice work. Yeah, that sounds good. And I'll follow
Thanks,
up with that
Chris.
Question about raising sustainability in bulls. That's interesting. But we got to take a break here, and we'll come on back with more. Roger and Betsy Inderlin, thank you guys so much for supporting the community. And also Chris Mayhews, thank you too. Back with more here as we'll have some final thoughts. And then we'll continue on our statewide program. We'll wrap up here at 10 o'clock, but we've got more folks to talk to as we honor Toro Heroes here in Big Timber, Montana. Back with more from the Circle T Tap Room in just a bit.
Did you know that Stockman offers more than banking services? We also offer all lines of insurance, including home, auto, life, crop, farm, ranch, and business. At Stockman Insurance, our experienced agents will take the time to work with you to design the right insurance package to meet your specific needs at competitive prices. Contact us today for a free quote. Stockman Insurance, Montana's brand of insurance. Equal opportunity employer and provider.
Welcome back. Tom Schultz alongside the Northern News Network's Voices of Montana. And we're going to do something special here as well, because we want to honor a tow rope hero from Big Timber, Montana, both Art and Barb Sell. They've been nominated, and as a result of the pandemic, unable to join us today for the interview here at the Circle T Tap Room. Art Sell has been involved in promoting and developing Big Timber, as some would say here, it just seems like for a century. He is 92, and he's visited veterans in the nursing home for years, and he now finds himself as the lone veteran in that nursing home. A longtime member of city leadership, his wife Barb, responsible for a lot of good things here in the Big Timber community, including the rehabilitation of the local library. We are going to go see now if we can connect up by phone with Art and Barb Sell. Art, are you there?
Yes.
Art, glad to hear your voice, sir. Thank you for your service. You've been a member of the American Legion for years and years. You and your wife, Barb, have been a community supporter, recognized by many here. First of all, tell us how you're doing, and then talk about You know, all the service that you guys have poured into this community and why you're doing it, sir.
Well, I'm trying to learn the blocker. Well, we were charter members of the Chamber of Commerce here, and we served both as directors and chairman. I've been American Legion member since 1961 and a member of the Volunteer Fire Department for over 20 years. And, boy, I'll tell you what, things just keep popping up. And I'm trying to get healed up so I can get out of this place.
Oh, yeah. Well, God bless you in that endeavor. Talk about how you have seen this community grow over the years, then, as you have been a long-serving member.
Oh, boy. My memory's not that fabulous anymore. It's pretty good, but it's pretty slow picking up. So people talk too fast. I don't pick up stuff too well. So
I got you. Then just talk about maybe some things that you remember. Talk about your wife. She was a longtime member of city leadership.
Yeah, she still is. Some with the library and Dornick's Park Hospice. She's busy all the time.
Is she there with you?
Yes, she is. She can answer for me real good.
All right, Barb, we've got just a few minutes here, or actually just less than 1 minute, Barb. But talk about the service that you and Art have. Talk about how the community has meant so much to you that you pour into that service.
Well, I was born and raised here. Art moved here when he was in high school. And we've always felt it's very, very important for us to support all of the community efforts. And this is a wonderful community. And we're also very happy to have our PMC here. It is a wonderful facility, and we're glad to have it close by.
Well, you guys have meant an awful lot to this community, as we have gotten a lot of nominations for you guys as Total Rope Heroes. That's Art and Barb Sell. Thank you guys so much. Get better and get back to it, okay, you guys?
Thank you.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
One of our favorite artists around here, Vince Gill, and welcome back. Tom Schultz alongside the mighty 790 and 94.7 KGHL as our tow rope tour continues. I call it 406-ing because we like to be 406-ing in Montana, and especially for 406-ing at like a brewery, which is what we're doing this morning at the Circle T Tap Room in Big Timber, Montana, and continuing on with the many folks that have done a ton of different things supporting this local community. A big shout out to the folks at the Pioneer Medical Center. It was great to chat with Art Sell and Barb Sell last hour. Also want to thank Sabanye Stillwater, one of our sponsors here, as well as Mountain Health Co-op and Western Ranch Supply. And let's just get on with it. Josh Donald from the Cayuse Ranch. Sustainability, a big part of this. FFA, and you went ahead and volunteered, and now you're a school board member. Good
yep,
job.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's a tough job, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be challenging.
What do you like about it then?
I think it was just a chance to, you know, give back to the community and serve, and in these smaller communities, everybody's kind of got to take their turn at it, and I had a couple kids that were coming up and going to be in the school system, so I just wanted to be involved.
Good job. And you were saying just a little while earlier that the school board, school system doesn't need shaking up around here. A lot of good people that are involved. Some tow rope heroes, I suppose.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we've got a real good supportive community and a real level-headed community, I would like to say. And there have certainly been changes on in the school since I've been there, but right now I feel like we're in a really good spot. Got good administrators, great set of teachers, and things are just clicking along.
How are they responding to the pandemic? I know last year was a different scenario than this year, but kids catching up, kids feeling their way through it, and teachers and administrators?
Last year was was certainly really challenging. But this year has kind of been more back to normal. Made the commitment that we think the kids are best served by being in our building and learning face-to-face with our teachers, and have followed through with that. And it's been a good year.
Nominated as a Toro Apparel for some of your sustainability practices on the ranch as well as at the school board. You would say some of your Toro Apparels are the Stanleys who support that FFA program.
For sure. They came here a few years ago, and they just hit the ground running. Just a dynamite couple. Always have had a good FFA program here in Big Timber, but they've taken it to new levels and getting a lot of new interest in it. And you know, state officers are coming out of the program, so it's really successful.
So it's growing then?
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah. So what are you guys doing on your ranch, the Cayuse Ranch, sustainability-wise?
Well, sustainability-wise, I think it's kind of been in our genes ever since, you know, my grandfather. And so, you know, we've always taken care of the land, realized that if you take care of the land, it'll take care of you. I think a lot of time, sustainability to us means keeping our family on that ranch involved in agriculture. So we work a lot on succession planning, and we're going through that right now with the fifth generation. And just keeping the lifestyle to something that people want to come back to, and keep taking care of the land and the livestock.
Was it, you kind of said you were involved early on. What's the next steps for you guys when it comes to sustainability?
Well, I think soil's a whole new kind of the way things are going right now. We've always taken care of the grass, which I think in turn leads to good soil management. But getting to understand that soil a little bit more, we haven't gotten into it as much as, say, the Enderlands, but we definitely keep that in mind. I've really changed our farming practices, and so we're going down that road with sustainability right now.
Right. Carbon credits will be a part of agriculture, as yep. I hear more yep. and more. Who would you give a shout-out to? Who is that hidden Toro Apparel in your life, Josh?
It can
be your wife.
That's a good.
I'm gonna throw that out there right now. It's your wife, and then who?
After my wife, yeah. I guess I just have to give it probably to my dad and my parents, just for the way they raised us with such an open mind, and we could come back and make our own mistakes and do anything we wanted. Really
nice. Appreciate that, and thanks for all the work you do around here as well. You know, keep up.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Josh Donald with the Cayuse Ranch and sustainability ranching practices there, and also a member of the local school board. We're back with more here as the Toro Rope Tour will continue from the Circle T Tap Room in just a bit on the Mighty 790 and 94.7 KGHL. That is Guitars and Cadillacs, the White Yoakum on the Mighty 790 and 94.7 KGHL. I'm Tom Schultz. We're back live. The Toro Rope Tour continuing here at the Circle T Tap Room. That's right. It's a brewery. That's right. It's 10:30 in the morning. That's right. Everybody's here. But that's right. It's okay, because today's a special day as we are celebrating the community of Big Timber, thanks to Mountain Health Co-op, also Western Ranch Supply, and especially Sabanier Stillwater. We're going to talk with the Halliburtons, Kevin and Shirley, a big part of the history, a big part of the community. Of course, the Halliburton Ranch has been here. I was just speaking, and good morning, Kevin. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
Yeah, thanks. Shirley, how about you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, 100 years, more so, 1883 is when your great-grandfather settled in this area.
Yeah, he come in 1878 and brought a band of sheep in 1883, him and his two brothers. One would stay at the ranch, and the other two would go to Anaconda and work in a mine, and every 6 months they'd switch, and someone at the mine would come back to the ranch.
So. It's incredible, isn't it, to have that sense, surely, of history, being a part of plus 100. Well, it's going to be 100, almost 150 years coming up, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another seven.
His grandfather also built the Grand Hotel here in Big Timber.
Ah. So everywhere you look, there's a connection, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that why, one of the reasons, I suppose, that you're so connected to the community even nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, the sheep industry is real important to me and my family. We've got a grandson that for Christmas he wants a handpiece to learn how to shear sheep.
Ah.
So, 15 years old, he's pretty committed to the sheep industry.
Are you going to give him a new one, or are you going to give him something that your grandfather gave you?
Well, yeah. I'm afraid the stuff that I've got are so antique that he might not want them. Might do better with a brand new something.
Well, Shirley, how does that make you feel when you see that your grandkids are interested in what you guys have done here and laid the groundwork for?
Very thankful and blessed that they're wanting to carry on.
Have you been encouraging that in their lives?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Subtly or just
can.
Right out loud?
Oh, I think
it's right out loud.
So the wool industry then, very large connection here. We're going to be exploring that as a crew a bit later on as well. But why don't you start or just talk about how it has grown or the challenges you faced or maybe some of the hurdles that you've overcome that now make it easier for the next generation.
Well, the sheep industry has been declining in the U.S. since probably the 40s. So, but in like 1906 or 7, somewhere in that era, Big Timber was the world's largest wool shipping point in the world, shipped over 1 million pounds of wool. But I think the first year I was on the wool pool board was in the early 80s, and we shipped, like 250,000 pounds of wool and had 125 growers. Now we're combined with three other counties and we ship about 45,000 pounds of wool
mm-hmm.
and maybe have 30 growers. So it has really declined. But
is it a profitability thing? Is it a regulation sort of thing?
I think labor and predators are one of the biggest things. And it used to be that with the wool tariff, they used to put the sheep industry itself on the trust fund that the wool tariff went mm-hmm. into. And for some reason in the late 60s, middle 60s, they turned that over to the government. So the government collects the tariffs in. And at that time, there was what they called the incentive payment. So if you grew a superior product, they had a baseline of $2 a pound. So if you sold your wool at 120% of what the national average was, you got 120% out of the tariff. So it paid you for producing a superior product.
Yeah.
But in 93, Al Gore took that away from us. And so every dollar that the tariff collected, they put $5 into the general fund and paid $1 to the growers. Well, after the 93, $6 went into the general fund. And the growers, we lost that incentive payment. So you've seen the sheep numbers really decline after that.
Wow, that's very substantial.
Yes.
And that's part of the problem, Shirley, is that understanding our values and our way of life, it's hard to communicate that to folks who don't live on the interior. You know, but in part of that is growing, is educating, and I suppose that your involvement in the Fiber Fest is what leads to that or what helps.
Yes, I think it started for me more with through the Montana Wool Growers. I ran the promotion and outreach booth for about 10 years and trying to promote our industry. And then once I kind of gave that up, I got together with a few gals here in Big Timber and started the Fiber Fest. I think this spring will be our sixth year.
Ah.
So it's growing as well. We have vendors and everybody from alpacas to any different kind of sheep you can imagine come and show spinning and weaving and all that. It's really fun. It's in May, so hopefully we'll have our dates confirmed here shortly and have that up and running again for the about the first part of May sometime.
That'd be cool. I lived a lot of my time in western Montana, spent some time growing up in Glendive. We're in Billings now. That's not too far, and my wife would be here for that Fiber Fest, I can guarantee you. And talk briefly about the farm fair as well.
That started several years ago. Three other people and I were invited to one that they have in Bozeman, and we got to go over and see how it worked. And when we came back on our drive back, we decided that we needed something like that here in Big Timber. just because of how far away even our farm kids have gotten away from egg. I mean, a lot of them don't have milk cows or chickens or sheep mm-hmm. or anything like that. So with this, we can help them learn about bees, wool, spinning, all the different booths. I think we have 16 of them. The Crazy Mountain Cattle Women have it now, so.
Yeah.
But it's.
Heidi's a go-getter, too.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. Thank you, Shirley. Kevin, I do want to have you just kind of conclude about what would you say to the younger generation to encourage them? You know, how much is the upside for wool growing in Montana, and what's the value to them?
Well, if you put a pencil to it today, the sheep industry is going to dollar out way better than the cow enterprise. We sold lambs this spring for $3 a pound. And when you figure you can get 130 or so percent lamb crop, which is being real conservative, and you can winter them a lot cheaper than a cow, and they're more of a desert animal too. So when you have a drought like we just had, they do way better than what the cattle industry does. But they also eat more than just grass. I mean, so we've been doing quite a few different weed projects. And sometimes we get paid for the weed project. Sometimes we're donated the feed. But very seldom do we have to pay for the weed project. So there's some opportunity.
It sounds like it.
And you can get into the sheep industry a lot cheaper than, but it takes labor and you have predators.
Yeah, I know, and that's another thing that we could talk about some other time, but you sold me on it, okay?
Good.
Yeah,
yeah. I got some used for sale.
Yeah. Kevin and Shirley Halverson, thank you guys for what you do and for being Toro Heroes in this community.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and we'll come on back with more here as the Toro Rope Tour will continue live from the Circle T Tap Room 406 in beautiful Big Timber, Montana, on the Mighty 790, and that's the Judds on the Mighty 790 and 94.7 KGHL, Girls Night Out. You could almost call it that here because it's sort of a girls' morning at the Circle T Tap Room. I'm teasing a little bit, but we do have Risa Gilpin with us here and Lori Rennie of Tumblewood Tees. Tom Schultz, we're back live on the Tow Rope Tour in Big Timber, Montana. So, Risa, I suppose this is your first time in the brewery?
Oh, definitely.
Yes, right. Yeah. And Lori, you too?
Yeah.
You just followed Risa in, right? That's what happened here. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You guys have started a unique business here, and people have appreciated that. And Risa, talk about Tumblewood Tees. What is Tumblewood Tees? And then I'm going to ask you, Lori, why Big Timber, Montana?
Tumblewood is kind of a culmination of a lifelong dream of being in some type of tea business, and also wanting to have good tea in this area. Mm. So when my husband and I moved to Big Timber, wheels were set in motion, so to speak. And after a few months of figuring things out, different business trials, Tumblewood was able to happen, created over a weekend pretty much, coming up with a name and a vision for starting it. So that's pretty much how it all started.
You guys sell teas? Do you make teas? Do you brew teas?
So Tumblewood started out pretty much we would bring in pre-blended teas. We did a little bit of blending and packaging. And then eventually we ended up buying a bigger facility business, blending business out. We bought the building right across the street from the brewery. How convenient is that? And with that and the new business that we bought, we really got serious about blending. Lori actually is in charge of importing all the teas and ingredients from all over the world, and also blending and creating new flavors for us. I'm more sales and marketing at this point, and kind of behind the scenes, making sure that it all tastes great.
Yeah.
And then from that, we were actually able to hire a lot of people from town. It started, 2009. We got our first employee, 210, I think, about. And then when we, like I said, 5-6 years ago, when we got bigger, we were able to hire a lot more people. We've brought in groups of people to work on large projects.
Oh, nice.
We supply the parks. We supply MSU all over the campus.
Oh, okay.
So we have big projects that happen. In any case, with all that said, none of it happens unless we have the quality of the tea that we want, and that's on Lori's shoulders.
And I want to talk to you about that. I mean, importing tea into Big Timber, Montana, but first, settling in Big Timber, the community has to warm up to you, or you adopt them, they adopt you. That there's a process that happens there. But why Big Timber?
Well, we were just both here.
Yeah.
And it's where it was born. And
what makes it work here then?
The community.
Yeah. All about that.
Had the community support from day one.
Yeah, good.
And it's just an amazing community. It's an amazing state. I mean, we've had across the state support like a small town.
Do they love it when you try some blending teas on them and go, what do you think of that? And they go, Lori, I'm not sure.
No. We usually don't let those ones out the door.
That's right, yeah. But that's sort of fun. How do you import into Big Timber, Montana then? It sounds like, as Reza was saying, there it's a pretty big market out there when you're providing universities and other connections like that.
And
challenges.
That definitely is a challenge. Yeah. Just getting freight into Big Timber, Montana isn't always easy, but I have some great sources out there that help. They do a lot of the importing, and then we bring it here from their facility. So that's been really nice to partner with great people like that.
Yeah, yeah. What's next then? Just more marketing?
It's a constant kind of building, if you will. We started really small and stayed in our area. Then we built into the state of Montana. The challenge of us getting the word out was Lori and I spending 5 years in the car, literally, driving the entire... Well, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, we covered it all. And now it's maintenance and, of course, always looking for new. But we are nationwide now. Yeah. So we stay home more, and more of it's phone work than it is, you know, traveling anymore.
Well, thank you, guys. We're out of time for this one. But we'll keep an eye on you, okay? And we're going to stop by the store there, too, because my wife is just a big tea drinker.
Well, come and have some.
Yeah, we'll do that. That's Reza Gilpin and Lori Rennie from Tumblewood Teas.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Okay. That's Merle Haggard of the Mighty 790 and 94.7 KGHL. I'm Tom Schultz. We're back live here at the Tow Rope Tour in Big Timber, Montana. A couple of things I want to mention here. There were some folks who couldn't make it today. So, and they were nominated. They are tow rope heroes in this community. So, Katie Rain, Crazy Mountain Veterinary, thank you for what you do. Cindy Bainter, you are also recognized for what the contributions at the Big Timber Schools. Jordan Seaman, Mr. and Mrs. Stanley with the FFA. We will visit them later on this afternoon. Couldn't make it here today. But thank you again for what you do to serve this community. And also thanks to Sabanye Stillwater in Big Timber for the rest of the day here. We talked with the gals from Tumblewood Tees. Going to visit the Wool Warehouse. We'll visit their place, the Big Timber Schools, a bit later on today. And join us tomorrow for the Tow Rope Tour Grand Prize Drawing at Western Ranch Supply in West Billings. Time to give away that zero-turn Bad Boy mower, of which Coulter and Kendra Todd are now eligible for. big thanks to Western Ranch Supply, Mountain Health Co-op, and Sabanye Stillwater. And we talk with Coulter and Kendra now. Coulter, how you doing?
I'm good, man. This is great.
Thank you for opening up the brewery just a little bit early. Was that a tough... You were here anyway, weren't you?
Yeah, I didn't see any red beers poured, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, we're here.
That's typical Montana, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Kendra, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Where do we want to start? I want to start with what got you into opening up a brewery here in Big Timber, Montana?
Oh, man, that's a long story. But we'll try and give you a shortened version of it. Kendra has been involved in the chamber. I'm involved with the Community Foundation. And, you know, we've been a big part of this community since probably 2016. And we just want to, we just heard people like, hey, we want somewhere where everybody can come visit, right? Mm-hmm. And then what better way to do that than with a brewery or a local tap room? We really wanted to make it kid friendly. We have a kids table.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted everybody in the community to be involved in it.
And Kendra, go ahead and follow up on that, because it takes, it's not just something that Colter could have done on his own, I don't think.
No, yeah, we originally started, we purchased this building for my graphic design business, and it was a lot of building for that, and so it kind of just morphed into what else could we do in this space that would bring the building back to life and make it a nice community center. So we've got the opportunity to visit with the people from Phillipsburg Brewing, and they really encouraged us to just try it. So that's how that happened.
Yeah, but it sounds like a lot of that was not that you were just hankering to start a brewery, but you were hankering to kind of help your community out and furnish something that they needed, and also refurbish a place downtown.
Correct, yeah. I mean, we went through a lengthy process here. We purchased it in 2016. Obviously, it was a gas station, so, and that's the cool reason we kept it the way it is, because, I mean, you can talk to people that have come in here and changed tires right over here, right? The office was over here. This is where people came in and hung out, even in high school. So I really wanted to keep that. Now, I opened it up. I designed and built it. So that it feels like you're outside, and so you're not walking into some dark place. You're walking into a well-lit establishment. But yeah, I was hankering for a brewery. I like breweries, don't get me wrong, but I had to convince my wife, and basically once I had the plans done and then it passed through city planning, everybody was stoked for it. So
did you brew beer before?
I did, yeah. So I also own a construction company, so I was you know, in the winter time, that's typically my slower time, so I don't like to be slow, so I wanted to do something. So actually, my wife and my mother bought me a homebrew kit, and we started brewing in the wintertime. And so, but now I have a great man who brews for us. Nathan is our head brewer here, and he does an amazing job. I would love to brew more. Him and I are actually going to do a brew this winter. It'll be our first collaboration since, I think, the beginning. So.
Okay.
But yeah.
So Kendra, does he try all the bad brews out on you, or just all of them, and then you say no, not this one, Colter?
I don't think we've had a bad brew,
oh,
honestly.
Good. Yeah.
Nothing that was undrinkable for sure.
Yeah. Well,
we've had some question marks. Like when we did the garlic beer, we're like, I don't know about this.
We were a little unsure, but I think it's really taken off.
Well, the school puts gummy bears in their sausages.
Yeah.
We learned too. So
exactly.
I think almost anything goes. Talk about Kendra being a proprietor in a small town. What does it take?
A lot of energy, a lot of just drive to keep going, keeping other people in mind, I think, because this isn't all for us, right? We work hard to make it a place for everybody.
Yeah, and you get buy-in from the community?
Oh, I think we've had really awesome community support. We host a lot of events here, which this is one of them. Thank you for being here. This is awesome.
Thank you guys.
This goes back to our mission of being super community focused. So we're glad we can provide the space. We have a conference room that we rent out to nonprofits that they can just come use for free, which is awesome. I think we've been really well received by the community.
And we're huge community supporters in this town. And I mean, one example, we wanted to do a brew and support the fire department. So our main office is down here, right? Well, we see how many times these guys go out and volunteer every week.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing a red beer, rescue red beer. And
nice.
We donated proceeds of all the pints that were sold here to the fire department. So, and we'll keep that going. I don't think we've set anything for the upcoming brew,
yeah,
but
we're always looking for something that we can continue that tradition, because that was one of our main goals when we opened, was to brew beers for the community and be able to give back.
And I mean, another collaboration we've done being in the community here is Tumble of Teas. We've done three or four beers with collaborations with the tea ladies. Actually, Brian with Pioneer Meats, he built us a sausage with our honey porter in it.
Oh, okay.
And we sold those here. So it's just fun to be involved with the community.
It sounds like it.
Really good neighbors. And
It sounds like it. I want you to have a, because there, you know, there's all kinds of brewers that do pint nights, and you guys sound open to that sort of thing. But absolutely. I'm looking here at a crazy Hefeweizen, canned and everything. How'd this come about?
So it's crazy. So Nathan came from Billings, and I said, all right, the first beer I want is a porter, because that was my favorite beer at the time. So we did a porter, and then I said, the second beer we have to do is a Hefeweizen. And he's like, really? I was like, dude, I'm telling you, this community loves Hefeweizen. So then I think Colby came up with the name Crazy Heifer, and then we just decided to roll it into the Hefeweizen. And Kendra can explain a little bit more on the artwork side, because that's on her side, but it's basically built for the ranchers and farmers in this community. And everybody who sees that picture can relate when you have to deal with cattle.
So the picture on here is this crazy kind of looking cow, mostly normal, kind of crazy, but it looks like it's lipping some Hefeweizen off of its lips here.
It might be partaking in the crazy.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. Thank you guys for hosting us. Thank you for being Total Apparels in this community. And thank you for launching next year's Voices of Montana Brewery Tour.
Hey, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That would be great.
We'll start and we'll finish here as well.
Yeah, let's do that. That sounds great.
Yeah, Coulter and Kendra Todd. We'll take a break and come on back with more as Mark King will join us next as we continue on with the Tote Rope Tour. Man in Black on the Mighty 790 and 94.7 KGHL. Tom Schultz once again alongside host of Voices of Montana. We are extending our Tow Rope Tour as we normally do. And today in Big Timber, Montana, thanks to our sponsors, Sabanier Stillwater, also Mountain Health Co-op, and Western Ranch Supply. And again, don't forget, tomorrow it is in Billings with the Tow Rope Tour. And we'll be at Western Ranch Supply giving away that zero-turn bad boy mower, which is going to be really cool, and I bet you Mark King could use it.
Yeah, I could use it, but
you could use it.
Shane and Keith will probably fight me over that one, so we'll let them have
it. They'll go, no, not pick another guy out. We need a winner, not a loser.
That's what they're going to do. I know.
That's the kind of friends you have. Yeah, is that what it is?
Yep, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Mark King is with us, MSU Extension agent here for the Big Timber area. And Sweetgrass County, beautiful land around here. We talked with a lot of farmers and ranchers, business owners. I get the sense there's a real, real connection to the people and the land in this area.
Huge, especially if you go back to the generational families that are here, the Donalds, the Halversons, Stenbergs, all those guys. You know, they're the lifeblood of this community. They're the ones that kind of make it work. We are seeing a lot of people move in here. Beautiful scenery. And
it changes.
They're changing our community some, but, you know, as long as we can keep these long-term ranch families on the land, that's going to be the key.
Yeah, and involved in the community. And you know, as you bring that up, it's about educating as well, you know, and staying engaged. And that's part of what you do as MSU Extension agent.
Correct, yeah.
How do you connect? How do you connect with new people moving into the area so that they learn our appreciation or the people who live here, their appreciation for the values? Not an easy question, sorry.
Not an easy question, and it is quite a challenge, I think. Again, we've had a lot of good people in the community that have helped us. Laura Nelson, when she was here working for the Pioneer, she had several ideas. Stock Growers, the Crazy Mountain Stock Growers Group, does a pretty good job of some outreach. Crazy Peak Cattle Women do a nice job. Sweetgrass Wool Growers, you know, all of them combine, and whenever there's festivities in town or something, we had the Crazy Mountain Stock Growers and Sweetgrass Wool Marketing Association dinner, egg appreciation dinner on Friday night last week, and 250 people there, and a lot of people from just the community, you know, come to support agriculture and have a good evening, and fed them strip loins and leg of lamb dinner, and you know, that's as close as we're getting right now.
But that, and there's probably a lot of tow rope heroes in even just an event like that, right?
Yeah, for sure. Probably the biggest one would be a young lady named Candy Schumann that works in my office. She's also the secretary for the stock growers. She's runs the fair board schedule. She does some airport board minutes. Ladies kind of behind the scenes. She's the one that really makes the county fair work here. I get to stand up on the microphone, but she does all the work. And, you know, Candy Schumann's the one that kind of makes it all happen. So.
Oh, that's nice. So nominating her and giving her a pat on the back.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'm going to take another degree. If Candy Schumann was to nominate a Toro Puro, you know, who would that be?
I know
you
can't
speak for her.
Yeah. No idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, gotcha.
Candy doesn't talk a lot.
She just does all the work. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Well, thank you, Candy, for what you do here. I kind of want to talk about more on the work that you're doing in this community, moving it along. We talked a little bit about education. We talked sustainability. It seems like this community has embraced sustainability in a large way.
Large, yeah. Yep. You know, with Donald's and Enderlin's, and Enderlin's kind of, I think, were the ones that started it with some of their contacts with Nicole Masters out of New Zealand and getting some of that going. But lots of good things. North 40 Egg, Kate Vogel down there, and Mark help us quite a bit just in terms of helping us develop cover crop mixes and stuff that will help the soil. And several operations are using that in a drought year like this. You know, that was huge. I can point to several ranches that used that to stretch their fall grazing. Some of them are still out on some of that cover crop stuff that they had under irrigation. So, you know, those people like that are huge and helping us make sure this land stays viable and productive.
You mentioned irrigation. We spoke earlier with Dan Rosted.
Dan Rosted, yep.
Yeah, yeah. How important does that play in the role that you serve as well as an extension agent?
It's huge to have Dan down there. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have a big FSA head honcho in our county anymore. Mm-hmm. That's something that Crazy Mountain Stock Growers and the wool growers are going to try to address with the legislators back in D.C. and gotcha. See if we can get a person here back in the community that our ranchers can access those programs that'll help us, you know, move forward and keep doing things.
That makes a lot of sense. I was going to ask this question. What's the push now? Where do you need to go? Where are you trying to herd the cat, so to speak?
Well, you know, with the Crazy Mountains up here being checkerboarded ownership, yep. that one's still a challenge and a hot button issue. But the other one is just access. You know, this year, unprecedented drought in the whole state of Montana, and it didn't skip Sweetgrass County. As you drove through Sweetgrass County, you see the Yellowstone River, you see the pivots and the stuff that Dan and the Conservation District have got done. You know, that makes us look good from the highway at 80 miles an hour, but
yeah,
get out there and really look. And we were challenged, and we need access to those funds to help these producers continue to produce.
I got another name here that I wanted to have you talk about, Buzz Finn.
Buzz Finn, great gentleman. Been the caretaker down at the fairgrounds for a couple of years now. You know, whenever I need something down there for the fair, or you know, anytime anybody schedules anything at the fairgrounds, it comes through the extension office, and Candy handles that. And you know, Buzz just goes down there and puts his nose down and kind of goes to work. And I don't know, you know, listening to Jeff Choate, who used to coach the Cats, you know, his blue collar mentality. That's what I try to instill in the kids I work with in 4-H here. Just, you know, don't look for the awards. Just put your nose down and let's get her done. And I think that, you know, Buzz epitomizes that.
That gentleman
just, he puts his nose down. He doesn't look for a pat on the back or anything. He just goes and does what needs to be done.
That's what makes the communities tick, is people like that who just say, I'll do the right thing for the right reason. And,
correct.
And that's why we're out doing Toro Puro tours. Okay, so what does happen in the wool room?
The wool warehouse that we have here, just it's a old historic brick warehouse sited down here by the railroad tracks. We store all the Sweetgrass County wool marketing wool in there, and we're also the warehouse that stores what they call the Eastern Montana Pool, which runs from Shoto all the way across the High Line and down into Weibo. And so we've got our wool for Sweetgrass Wool Marketing Association there, which is combined with Stillwater and Upper Muscle Shell. And then we've got all that wool that comes from everywhere else in the state is stored at that warehouse. We're a logical location because we're on the interstate. You know, when that wool finally does get marketed, we can put it on a truck and get the truck driver on the interstate, and he can head to South Carolina or wherever we need to go with that raw commodity.
Well, I'm impressed with the community and how they all work together in many facets, and that includes this industry. I mean, just it's every facet, I think, Mark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Recognizing Candy Schumann, also Buzz Finn, and yourself. Thanks for what you do, Mark.
Thank you.
Yep. Mark King, the MSU Extension agent here in Sweetgrass County. I'm Tom Schultz, and that's going to wrap it up here from the Circle T Tap Room. We'll be back here, though, I guarantee you. We might not even leave here, so I'm not even sure. Oh, wait, we got a schedule to follow. Okay, sorry. We'll follow that schedule. Thanks to Eric Young back in studio in Billings, and Nick Tyler as well, and all the guests here today. But tomorrow, the grand prize giveaway from Western Ranch Supply, our tow rope tour will conclude with the Billings community. A lot of good folks to talk to there as well. So until then, I'm Tom Schultz. We'll turn it back to Garth Brooks.